Today is Monday, June 12th, 2023, and it's our last year for this term. With the completion of today's year, I complete 63 full years of teaching Dvar Hashem. Yesterday's year, I said there's a machlokes in America now between Lakewood and Torah Vadas. And when I originally saw the story about the Kinnus Adirei Torah in Philadelphia, so I immediately was bothered that Rav Shach's son-in-law, is in the middle of sitting Shiva, and he gets up and comes to the Kinnus, 25,000 people singing, dancing, food. So they say the posek in Lakewood was Matir, Rav Simcha Bunim Cohen, I believe is his name. And I'm told he's quite a reliable Talmud Chacham. And it's hard for me to say Rav Yitzhak Lichtenstein. I want to say Yitzi, you'll pardon me. I mean, I knew him when he was just the gleam in his parents' eyes. But Yitzi wrote a five-page tshuva against the psak. And he says at the end that even if it was necessary in the modern world, it could have been done exactly as you're listening to me through Zoom and put it on screen. And I'm very impressed with Yitzi. First of all, he raised the problems that I raised, but I'm more impressed for a different reason that not many of you can comprehend. That Mori Urebi, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Chanur Or can write a tshuva, lahalacha. This is not Reb Moshe's Einikel. You understand that the Rav, Mori Urebi's Einikel, is a real tshuva written like Reb Moshe, la litvisha tshuva. So one of my talmidim listening yesterday, who's a fabulous individual, Rabbi Dov Shraya, wrote to me, please, before commencing, read the tshuva from Simcha Bunim Cohen. The criticisms of Rebbe are found in the tshuva of Rav Cohen Shlit. What he means is that evidently responds to the questions I raised. I just want to tell Dov there's only one problem. You didn't give me a link to his tshuva. Rav Bergman was brought in specially as the connection to Rav Shach, his father-in-law. There was no music when he was there, no singing when he came in. As he walked in, everyone said, "Namokum Yenachem," like Friday night we say, Midig Ashkenazim. He would come in his shiva clothing. He would speak and leave. No food was there when he was here. Please clarify this at the last class tomorrow. So I'm reading his tshuva, but I have to say, Rav Lichtenstein also mentions that people told him there was no this, no that, and others said there was. You know, you can't just stop people eating, drinking. All right, I was not there, so halacha l'maisa, I can't tell you what happened. But it is a shame. You can't dismiss the fact that this is a big heter given that the whole world knows about. You know, when I said Shiva, I have to say, you don't leave your house. What can you do? You're sitting Shiva. I didn't teach. I didn't go anywhere. I was sitting Shiva with all that that implies. All right, but by the way, I see he writes Rabbi Bergman. I thought the name is Bregman. Which
Bergman.
Like the, so I thought maybe they don't want to identify with the other. There may be reasons why I've heard Bregman, not Bergman. But Rabbi Bergman is in his 90s, and it's a great tragedy. He buried his son. I don't have to tell you it's a tragedy. But I understand the son was already 70, 70-something, in his early 70s. And let the issue hang fire.
Simcha Bunim Cohen is our shatchan.
Well, who was the shatchan?
Simcha Bunim Cohen is my shatchan.
Your shatchan. He's very solid, very good. Okay, I can only tell you that the theory I gave yesterday, I heard more theories, which I don't want to repeat, but the theory I gave yesterday, people kissed me, said, Rebbe, you may have hit the nail on the head. So I repeat my theory. I will see down the line if I'm right or wrong, but it's very simple. Ben, you tell me if it holds weight. in the Haredi yeshiva in America, outside, I use popular language, outside of Neir Yisrael, have a problem. They don't have students. Why don't they have students? Because when everyone finishes high school, they go to Israel, they go to Mir, they go to Bris. Those who go back go to Lakewood. Lakewood is a tremendous net, a sponge that swallows them all. So Teira Vadas was having a problem. Beyond the high school, they're lacking students. Mir in New York, I mean, these places, people whisper to me, if they were smart, they would shut down. So they brought in Yitzi Lichtenstein, and he's a real Rosh Yeshiva. He gives a shiur, and he speaks a few times a week. You got to hear him online. And I mean, I listen to him, I laugh, because he speaks English. Here is Rabbi Lichtenstein's son, a master PhD from Harvard, English literature, and Yitzi's the second son. Moshe was number one, Yitzi number two, and Yitzi's English, mit Yiddish, but he can't speak Yiddish because the people won't understand it, so it's a mixture, Yiddish, English. A kid who served in the army, went to Nativ Meir, I mean, it's unbelievable, but he's a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And he's putting Torah Vadas on the map. So I think he's making a statement. Hey, Lakewood, you don't have a monopoly anymore. We have something going in Brooklyn that may contend with your pull to all your students. We're going to sponge up some students too. And he comes out with this tshuva. Wow. All right, but I can't take sides. I wasn't there. I'm hearing already. You read. When you read the tshuva, you'll see. You get contrasting reports. But I still have to say, I am impressed that Reb Chaim Brisk is Uror Einikel, writes a tshuva as if he's Reb Moshe's Einikel. Okay, kol hakavod. Coming back to the question Jack asked me and that I discussed yesterday. So Jack says that wasn't even his question. His question was, and I hope I understand it correctly, that what I just published now in the donkey essay, not the donkey essay, I have donkey on my mind because my wife is doing artwork on the Sheikh Zitainu and what the Gemara means in Sanhedrin, Tzadichet, that it's going to be a donkey of 1,000 colors, 100, another interpretation, 1,000. Ben, did anyone ever talk about this in Lakewood? All right, I gave my wife, I got to look at the morale. But I have my own interpretation, but it's not for now. So forget about the donkey. But Hashgacha Pratit, the individual, you have to decide, you have to look over, you have to read my essay, it's not for now. The Rav's Drasha, Yosef Yechav. So Jack says, yeah, I can understand, this is for Klal Yisrael to look over their shoulders, the Gedolei Yisrael, the Rabbanim, but an individual, he just goes forward, he's not on that level. So I just want to say, Jack, how does my essay begin? I'm quoting, my whole essay is based upon the Rav's talk, Yosef Echav. And the Rav, in all Chamesh Drasha, you can go through all of them, the Rav has one tremendous problem. He grew up an Einigel of Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker considered a good Yisrael chutz l'tchum. Oisvaps, period. I don't want to go further. If you would see what Reb Chaim published about the Zionist movement and his Einikel. And remember, the Rav was in Warsaw. In Warsaw, he was on a good dish. That already was an innovation. And then he came to Germany and he saw a good, if I can quote Rakefet, in Warsaw was a good with a shtickel herring and a bissel breit. But in Germany, a gooda sat down to eat. Three forks, two spoons, two knives. Oh boy. And he comes to America, and a guy named also Rakefet did a lot of research, and the Rub's idol, I can tell you, this is Abe, when you do research, you come up with a theory. It's not a theory, what I'm telling you is a fact. Tova Lichtenstein, he said, you hit the nail on the head. The Rav comes to America, his idol was Reb Lazer Silva. He wanted to be like Reb Lazer Silva. Rav Leisa Silva, getroffen in America, a Talmud Chacham, a durchgenommene Talmud Chacham, a real Talmud Chacham, a real person who influences and has vision. And Rav Leisa brought a good at Yisrael to America. And he took Mori Urebi and made him a big shot in Agudat Yisrael. It breaks my heart because I lost a student to Yiddishkeit when he repeated, he went to his Rebbe in Osser Meir and repeated, I said, the Rav was a member of the first Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. And his Rebbe said, who told you that? Raketet, he's lying, it's false, it's not true. So the kid went to the library. And he took out the Silva era, and he took out my Pardes, and that, you know, I hate to tell you this. Today he has a website for atheist Jews, and what started him on the path to atheism was his teacher in Osser Meir, who called me a liar, and how can the Rav be an Agudat Yisrael acknowledge Rav Soloveitcher? It's so sad, so sad. Don't think, Chaim, I didn't get in touch with the student. I have two students who went way. I have a lady of, I remember, don't mention the name, a famous Torah family, and a dear student of mine, and she went way off the path. I asked permission from her family to write to her. I wrote, but ultimately she wouldn't answer me, because she understood already, as nice as I am and as broad-minded as I am, the Baruch Hashem Zu Halacha. Reshit Chachma Yirat Hashem. I didn't succeed with either one, not him and not her. With her, ulai, there's hope yet, but Eibishter, she give me strength. So the Rav became a Mizrahiite. Vic, do you know what that means to leave Reb Chaim's path, to become a Mizrahiite, to differ with Reb Leizer Silva? But he looked over his shoulder, and he looked on the ground, and he saw what he believed God wants. And let me tell you, thank God the Rebbe became a Mizrahiite. His kol dodido fake. Every kid growing up in Israel in the Mamlachti Dati system is familiar with the kol dodido fake. I was Masada Kedushin for a grandson. Maybe two years ago, who can remember? His wife is, I'm due to have more great-grandchildren shortly. His wife is due to have her first. So this was at Kibbutz Chofetz Chaim. The girl grew up in Chofetz Chaim. So a Sephardic girl from a real, real from Moroccan family. I was so impressed. And that was the engagement party where, if anyone would have told me, when I'm growing up in Kibbutz Chofetz Chaim, Holy Agudat Yisrael, you're going to go to an engagement party, you won't be able to eat there. The table was filled with legumes. I still don't know to this day whether I got away scot-free or whether I had something with with real legumes in it. May legumes, don't bother me, but real legumes. I'm still a Lithuanian. What can I do? So at the wedding, two of his friends with the Adam, two Sfada kids, they did Hester together, Lamdonim. I saw these kids, knew how to learn, knew a Rambam, knew what I was talking about. And I said to the kids, I look at them, I said, what? Where do you get all your strengths? And they look at me and say, well, when we went to high school, we studied Kol Dodido Fake. I said, you studied Kol Dodido Fake? I said, I was in the audience with my girlfriend, later my wife. You can show you the picture. I can spot myself in Malka. And I heard the Rav live, 1956. They looked at me as if I told them I was at Maimer HaSinai. You follow? So Baruch Hashem, that was a unique wedding, Chaim. I don't know if you know what do they call it, what they drew. I don't know what the word is, a trailer, to plow the land, whatever they call it, that's what they take the chatan v'kala on. And all decorated beautifully. What do you call it? Give me the word.
A tractor.
Right, thank you. A tractor. Because there were no horses. It was a tractor. And for the cheder yichud, I'm riding in the back seat with the two Adam. First time I ever rode the tractor. So, but the Rav looked over his shoulder. So I think what Jack is really saying, that on a real public issue, it's not me or you, it's the Rabbanim. It has to be, halavai, we have a Sanhedrin, all right? We don't have a Sanhedrin. It has to be Gedolei Yisrael. And they make a decision. And I can tell you, I saw it last week with the Rabbanim of the Mizrahi movement. Everyone got together and they selected as candidate for Ashkenazic chief rabbi, who gave me the name, Harav Meir Kahana. And I said, Ribbono Shel Olam, this name itself. And then you look at the picture, a short, small individual. They say he's Bucky and Shasim Paiskim Mashu, he's Av Beit Din in Ashkelon, a product of the Hesder Yeshiva up north in Kiryat Shmona. He's a Talmud of Rav Tzfonia Dorori. He's a Talmud of the Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook. So, all right, an individual can't make such tremendous decisions. You have to consult people chaverim, but still we have to look over our shoulder. Is what we are doing is right? And I hope that there are a lot of people today outside of Israel looking at their shoulder. What am I doing here? The Jewish people need me. Israel's the future. Look on the ground, what is happening? And if you can't get here, your children, encourage them, inspire. I just told a Talmud of mine who will soon be remarrying for the third time. He's unfortunately gone through Avela twice. And I told him, give yourself a chance to start all over. Rav Hutner once told me, when an older man remarries, an elderly yid vet a jüngere chassan, he becomes a young chatan. I said, you're young, you just turned 70. Come to Israel. Aye, the kids are in America. If you and your wife will be here, and I said, there's so much going on, you'll live longer, you'll be fulfilled, the OU, the classes, the learning, the spirit. Kids will start coming. Aye, the kavala tov. Now, I also want to mention, it has to do with yesterday's class, a very small matter, but we're not going to meet again until Elul. Tzvi Meisel, my student from BMT, wrote to me, remember I told the Shaila with Julie Mendel with the dishes, with the milchika margarine, so the Rav Paskin, I dealt with it yesterday. Okay, so he says, just wanted to mention to you that when you mentioned about your friend Julie today, Chaim Mendel is Baruch Hashem doing well and living in Alon Shvut. I fortunately had the opportunity to bump into him several times in the last few years. As an aside, my father, Alav HaShalom, built this house on Alon Shvut in 75, the same time he built our home there, and several others. So Baruch Hashem, you mentioned someone, they're alive and kicking. It's real. They're with us. Okay, finally, for the Talmud who we mentioned is a Tinuk Shinishba among the Mitnagdim, you wrote to me, you sent me that beautiful article about the something I've spoken about in class, about the Hesder Yeshiva boys and the people in my world seeking out a Rebbe, seeking out Hasidus today. I have a lot to say about it. It's not for now. But you mentioned about the Tolner Rebbe. I believe he lives in Bayit Vagan. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And he tells Hesder boys who come to him, do you have questions on Avodas HaKodesh, Avodas Hashem? And he tells them that the 40 Dapim of Gemara that he remembers best are those that he studied for his matriculation exams when he learned in Etiv Meir High School before moving on to the Chabini Yeshiva. Now, the Rebbe is the grandson of the previous Rebbe through his mother. His father, Rav Tzvi Weinberg, was a scholar and lover of Eretz Yisrael, who bridged many worlds and had several positions, including being the mankal of the Misrad HaDatot. Yes, I remember his father. He was one of the leaders of the Mizrahi in Israel, But I just want to ask you another question, a simple question, David. I had a student from that family in BMT over 50 years ago, let's say, in Rehov HaBarbanel. His father was a medical doctor. I believe the last name was Weinberg, and I believe I was told that he was a big Hasidic Yichus. He could have been the Rebbe, but he chose to be a medical doctor. And that young man had been in a car accident. And I remember his father was very pleased that we were, I think the car accident was in Toronto. I think they were from Toronto. And his father was very pleased that the young man was so happy in BMT. Is that the same family? Is my memory correct? You don't know. All right. If you can, look into it. Anyone here from BMT those years? Dr. Weinberg, am I right with the name? Okay. All right, let us move on. Yes, when we talk about Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, by the way, my Talmud, who's a good historian today from Chabad, asked me again, are you sure that the library was destroyed by Hitler? He sent me links to articles written that it's not correct. Okay, so I can only say I'm quoting from the doctorate. And I can't answer questions like that. I didn't do the research. I'm quoting research. I'm standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Dr. David Slavin. So I told my Talmud, I told Rabbi Shmayahu, Nachum Shmayahu, I told him to contact Rabbi Slavin and ask him how he answers these articles. But I stand on what I said last week. I cannot believe that the Nazis didn't burn part of the books of the library. If Slavin quotes that, of course it had to happen. But like anything else, some of the books survived. And I showed you that my Talmud in Kew Gardens Hills, Baruch, has a book with a stamp on it of a private individual that he donated it to Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, and he checked with Yad Vashem. This individual was killed during the Holocaust. So it is shayach that some of the books survive. But from what Dr. Slavin writes about in his doctorate, the Nazis thought when they came in they had a library with books that would be helpful to them. It's all in his doctorate. And they took the books and they analyzed them and they said, no, this is stupidity, it's Talmud and rabbinics, it's ancient knowledge that is worthless today. And they said, we don't need these books, and they destroyed them, they burned them. Now, during Rev. Meir Shapiro's time, one other person came on the scene who became very famous. And Rabbi Shapiro willy-nilly needed help. You can't run an institution single-handedly. You can't raise money single-handedly. You can't give shayurim and consul talmidim. You must absolutely have help. It's like the Rav in my time, Rabaran, the babe, was the Rav's assistant. You follow? And then he was the one. You didn't. If you had a shayla, a question, a problem, you went to Rabaran. You didn't go to the Rav right away. And this individual that we spoke about last week, Reb Shimola Engel. Now, I just want to tell you, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, many times you'll see him referred to as Reb Shimola Zelichova. Zelichova, Z-E-L-I-C-H-O-V-E-R. Why Reb Shimon Zelichova? Because this was the minig in Europe that it could be people didn't have last names or the last names didn't catch on, but that's where he was born. And they always referred to people by the city of their birth. In Mir as well, I mean, it wasn't just the Hasidic world. The Litvisha world as well, many of the Litvakin who came out and survived in the Shanghai crowd, it wasn't their last name, but I would say their nickname, where they were born, or where they were Rav, where they became famous. And Zelichova, many times you'll see Engel is forgotten, Shimon is forgotten, Reb Shimola Zelichova. Now, he became the right hand of the Maram Lublin. When the Maram died, the yeshiva faced real problems. There was no longer a focal person. Nature abhors a vacuum, and the fact that the students related to Reb Shimla as the leading spiritual individual put him into a very focal position. And here's what I referred to last week. Here's where the problems began. He was not the run-of-the-mill of a Peilische, Chassidische Talmud Chacham. First of all, he was light years above anyone else. And you know, when you speak of the Ragatshava, there is no question that the Ragatshava was the biggest Gaon that we had in pre-World War II Europe, Rabbi Yosef Rosen. Doesn't make him capable of being the Gadol Hadar. And I'll explain myself very simply, and you, if you're interested, take it further. You can do a doctorate, come up with a beautiful volume. What am I driving at? When you have someone like the Ragatshava, his mind is so independent and so great. All right, he says about, remember I told you, he said about Rabbi Yitzchak Kochanan, Efshe kenef ashtena taisvis. Maybe he knows how to understand the taisvis. You read the making of a Gadol by Rav Nosson Kamenetsky, you see Gedolei Yisrael came in to talk with him, and he got so mad at them rocks that he picked up a chair, or he threw the chair at them. But in Halacha also, for instance, we have a tremendous question of civil marriage. Someone just spoke with me this week that if we were Paskin like Rav Henkin, we would have a million mamzerim in the state of Israel. You understand? The civil marriage, anyone coming out of Russia, how many times were you married? So you got to hope they married goyim each time. They married a Jew. Was there a get? No. And with the United States, with all the balei tshuva, Rav Henkin held civil marriage needs a get. I mean, you've seen his svarim, you know, he argued with Rav Moshe. He never backed down. For me, Vic, there's a bigger problem. I once battled with Rebbe on this very issue. The Rav agreed with Rav Henkin. He held that you need a get for civil marriage. I can't go into the lundas now. I said shurim on it for many, many months, maybe over a year. But the Ragatshava came up with? No, you heard my shurim. She needs a get shichruh. After a civil marriage, you need to get shichra. Now, he had lamdas, but you see, Torah has to move in a certain form. There's a certain heartbeat. And this is off the path. So you see, the Ragatshava, as great as he was, and no one can deny his greatness. I spoke with you, remember, I told you about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, and the Ragatshava had a kinship, because you're dealing with two people whose knowledge was just above the ordinary runs of knowledge. All right? Now, when you come to Rav Shimla Engel, or Rav Shimla Zalatshava, you're dealing with someone who was different. And he was more of a mekubal. And he had his own mind. You teach anyone wants to learn Kabbalah, join me, we'll learn Kabbalah. No, a kid of 18 is learning Kabbalah? It's not mekubal b'neinu. You're not 40 yet. You're not married yet. Where do you come to Kabbalah? You see, there was something very different here. And the Board of Governors, and I'll talk about them in a moment, the Board of Governors who took over, because Chachmei Lublin, you had the Vyana Rebbe got involved, And the Luzhina Rebbeim, because the Maram Shapiro had been a Chatkav Chassid, which is the Luzhin, so Chatkav got involved, Sari Gera got involved, Boyan got involved, Reb Shlomo Le'eger got involved, and they felt that the presence of Reb Shimon was harmful. And he moved on. And as we spoke about last week, the end of his life, I mentioned it yesterday again, it's very powerful. how he, and I made a very good point. I hope you appreciated it, that Rebbe Hanan Wasserman and others, they pleaded with them, stay in America. Don't go back. Who could dream that Rebbe Hanan would be executed by the Nazis? You follow me? All right, there was trouble happening. It's like someone asking me to go to Russia, to go to communist Russia. All right, by the way, one of the people I sent, before he went and asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach asked him to ask me, what's the worst that happened? So I answered that we did have shluchim who were beaten up by the hooliganim. Hooliganim is a Russian word, and for our purposes it means the KGB agents who pose as hooliganim on the street. We did have people who were beaten up. And I said, that was the worst. Everyone got home, everyone got out. The worst is they can beat you up or they can kick you out on Shabbos. That's the worst. And that we asked the Rav. I have people I sent asked the Rav. And the Rav, when he heard communism, he started shaking so, because he saw what they did in 1918. He was there, 1917, 1918. He had a paranoiac fear. The Rav said, it is not Shabbos for you until you meet Helsinki. They used to kick you out on a plane to Helsinki. You do whatever they tell you. I remember he told them, you know, we had wise guys wouldn't carry their suitcases. You follow? And they insisted the KGB. By the way, two of my people who I sent, one is a dear student, you know who kicked them out? Putin. Putin was the head of the KGB in Leningrad. And they were kicked out from Leningrad by Putin. They couldn't believe how important he later became and how much of an Ohev Yisrael he is. But all right, he's a communist. That's above everything. And so the problems are real. You how do you balance it all out? And the feeling was that Shmuel Engel was too independent, too different in thought, not mainstream. Now, then a person comes in. We'll come later to Ayelev Fruma. There are going to be two more key names who play a major role in Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. I don't think we'll reach Ayelev Fruma today. Rav Fruma, Rav Heschel Schechter quotes him all the time. If you're familiar, they both have Svarim with the same name, I think, Eretz Tzvi. Rav Heschel quotes Rabbi Leib Fruma all the time. Quotes him in his Svarim, quotes him in his public talks. But here we come to a person who played a role and a stabilizing role. His name was Rav David Mintzberg. And this may be the very reason that Rabbi Slavin got involved with doing a doctorate on Lublin, because Rav David Mintzberg was his mother, he was his grandfather, his mother's father. Now, Rav David Mintzberg, first of all, he was a fascinating individual. He was a Gera Chassid. Now, when you say someone is a Gera Chassid, here he's coming in to Chachmei Lublin. Chachmei Lublin, David, has 40% of the students at Gera Chassidim. So you see, let me give you an analogy. A guy named Rakefet teaches in Mechon Lev. 40% of his students are YU products. Will he be prejudiced towards the YU population, the YU student? In other words, Ben Turin is teaching in Mechon Lev. 40% of his students are products of Lakewood. Okay? This is a you're a Lakewood. It's a challenge. Why? Rav David Mintzberg, and he's a Gera Chassid, he never showed any favoritism. All the students knew that he was totally impartial. And I have to tell you, this is a great achievement, and it makes someone, he was called the Mashkiach, but it was more than the Mashkiach. In addition, his whole personality was very attractive. And here you come to a question that we all have to deal with. And I will tell you something, I've said it over the decades, it's, don't give me the credit for the part, give it to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was interviewed by the newspaper saying, and you have to understand, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, I told you, when he died, I learned a new word in Hebrew, hu haya outsider. Until I understood, I see in Makari shown the word outsider, until I understood what the word meant, it's an English word, outsider. It's like I once saw a headline in 69, Golda Meir Omeret, Atzot Abrit, low fare. And I didn't know what that word meant in Hebrew. I asked my neighbor, he said, don't you speak English? I said, of course. Fair. I said, so lama lo hagun. Fair, that's the word they used. So they asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, how come you have no beard? How come you don't wear rabbinic clothes? That's, we don't recognize you. If we come into the yeshiva, we think you're one of the boys. So Rav Aaron said, and this is Rav Aaron's genius, Rav Aaron said, tell me, who is more important, a soldier or a member of the Mossad? So the interviewer said, well, you have to have both. So Rav Aaron said, exactly. Some people are inspired by the uniform. And some people don't want the uniform. They're inspired because they see who the person is in front of them. A soldier wears a uniform. Mossad people do not. He says, I'm for those who want a Mossad image. I don't say you can't have, you need it, an image of tzavav, tzahal, of uniform. It's a meritic answer. And by the way, this is where the Rav had a lot, I told you this more than once, and you can hear it on tape. There's one day you'll be able to hear it on tape where the Rav is speaking. I wrote this up in making of the Rav, the world of Rabbi Joseph P. Soloveitchik. I wrote it up, and people challenged me. Jack, do you remember this? How could the Rav said this? No, Rakefet is making it up. So I don't remember if it was in this room or the original Kollel class. I think it was this room already. We brought in the tape, and Jack and I hooked it up, and that shiur was just the Rav speaking. And Nebuch, the guy who challenged me, I'm not happy about what I'm about to tell you, the guy who challenged me made a party where he threw away his black hat and put on a kippah shrew guy. He's no longer alive. He's my Talmud, married to a wonderful lady. Died young, lo aleinu. But I told him, I said, I'm not here. I'm happy to see you with a black hat. But the Rav is different. Things thought differently. And the Rav, he could take a Reb Chaim, because Reb Chaim didn't dress as seders, he never dressed like a Rav, you're aware of it, this Chofetz Chaim never dressed like they were dressed. Simple, one of the people, whatever their reasons were. And the Chofetz Chaim tell you, you don't need anyone to tell you, you see it on the video, when he's coming to the Agudat Yisrael convention in Vienna, everyone around him, including his grandson, the Rabbanim, Rabbanim Shehat, the works, and there's the Chofetz Chaim looking like a Jew walking in the rotten market in the year 1875. It's a very inspiring video. So when we're dealing here with Reb David Mintzberg, he wouldn't wear rabbinic clothing. And he wouldn't let the Talmidim refer to him in third person. They only could refer to him as Reb David. You follow? And this is a certain image. I can tell you the story with the Rav. I don't have to give you any sources. These ears and these eyes. So what happened? Jerry Blau, Rav Yosef Blau, my Chavruta, Jerry went to Kerem Biyatna. He was one of the first kids in YU to study in Israel. He comes back after spending some months in Kerem Biyatna. And after Shia, we're asking the Rav a question, and he says, The Rav said, and the Moriu Rebbe says to him, who do you mean? Who do you mean? He says, Rebbe, I mean you. So say. See, the Rav couldn't handle that third part. You said. And you said, in Lakewood, would you talk like that to Rav Baran? You would say, Dereshishivat Gezak. But you see, there was a certain simplicity about him, and the students loved him, loved his humility, and he had a certain vote, which I repeat here, on the Gemara in Bracha, Daf Chavchet Omer Aleph. So you know the Gemara in Bracha, they got rid of Rabban Gamliel, and they replaced him by Rabbi Leza Ben Azayah as Nasi. And what was wrong with Rav Gamliel? He closed the Beis Medrash down. He wanted to be sure, Tocho Kavaro, that you're honest, that you're decent, that you're upright, that you're committed. And otherwise, you can't come into the Beis Medrash. And they opened up the Beis Medrash. And the Gemara says so many people came in that they had to bring 400 benches to accommodate the crowd. So Reb David Mintzberg asked a simple question. Why does the Gemara say 400 benches? Say 400 new students. Give a number of students, not benches. He says, no. The Gemara is telling you something. That Rabbi Gamliel was not entirely wrong. He only let in real good, sincere students. Once you opened it wholesale, you had to have a separate bench for each student, because each one had a big ego. Each one thought he was the Gadol Hadar. Each one thought he was all knowledgeable. And you see, this is Musa. This is a good point. A good point. I remember when I was a pest, I bothered the Rav with the Shaila of the two mezuzot. I know what I'm talking about. The Reb Moshe, I star in Yoredei, I believe it is the first chalik. I have a shayla to Aaron Yitzchak Rotkoff. Had a shayla to Reb Moshe as follows. My parents, who are not learned, so the and you know in the Bronx, when you rented an apartment, every 2 years they had to paint. So every 2 years they painted over the mezuzot. When I grew old, I was chayshish, the mezuzahs are psulat from the painting. But then I had another problem. Because they were painted over so many times, to take it off, you made a hole in the mashkof, or whatever the word is in English for mashkof. Anyone know? I'm forgetting my English. The column, what would you call it?
Door jam.
What?
Door jam.
Door?
Door jam.
Door post.
Door post. Door post. Okay, that sounds good. Mashkov. So I asked the Rebbe, you know, I was a smart kid, I came up with an answer. Rebbe, I'll put up a second mezuzah and I'll make it Tanai. If the first mezuzah is psulah, the second mezuzah is kish, is the mezuzah. If the first mezuzah is ksheirah, the second mezuzah is kishut ba'alma. No? Not bad. So I asked Rebbe, and Rebbe says he thinks this. I don't know what to say. So I have to tell you, I was very impressed that the Rav could say, I don't know what to say. And I can tell you, until today, just this morning and yesterday on a different issue, people ask me questions where I'm not the expert. I refer them to the expert. I'm not the expert. Let's be honest. You have to know who did the... Someone asked me a question yesterday, a rabbi, doctor, a Talmud, Chacham, Yerusha, Mayim, on Kishuv. The Rambam contradicts himself, a whole shayla with Perish Mishnayot and Hilchot Aveid Zara. So I told him, you're from England. Do you know what Jews College is? He says, Jews College? My great-grandfather graduated there. It doesn't exist here, I don't believe, but it was Jews College or day. I said, oh, you know what you... I said, did you ever hear the name Professor Avraham Zimmels? What was his doctorate on? On this very issue. Check it out. That's the man to go to. The Shaila is a good Shaila, but I'm not an expert on Kishuv. I don't know any Rabbanim today who are experts on Kishuv. But he wrote it. Then I told him, if you want to see more, perhaps Reb Tzvi Hirschayot deals with it in his Mabol de Talmud, Student's Guide to the Talmud. And that there you will get an answer. But you see, there has to be a certain humility to think you know it all, or to give answers, because they're turning to you, they think you're a genius, you know everything. Humility. And that's a good word. The Yared Benches. And let me tell you, in Yeshivas of Yisrael Chanan in my time, the Rebbeim, some of them needed their own benches. There's no two ways about it. They had a certain gaiva. Tells, you know, mir is nothing. Rotten, brisk. What they did to Reb Gerstenfeld, the Ungarish, I can't repeat in public what the Rebbeim used to call him, behind his back. And he of all the Rebbeim, was the only one who could paskin Shaila. The whole RCA based in goes back to Reb Shmuel Gerstenfeld in YU. People came with problems, chalitza, gittin. So what's YU going to say? We don't know what to do? Rabbi Gerstenfeld organized the Bastin. Later, he gave over the authority to Rabbi Yosef Weiss, and Rabbi Yosef Weiss already helped organize the RCA Bastin, which became a formal body, which Baruch Hashem acts until today. But, see, Rabbi David Mintzberg, it's a good vort, and this was Rabbi David Ginsberg. There was a certain humility involved that the students loved. Now, with this fart in mind, there was more to Rabbi David Ginsberg. He got involved with what they called in Poland at that time, Chokrim. Chokrim. Where does the word Chokrim come? We would call it philosophy, Jewish philosophy. Chokrim is from the word Choker. And this relates to what I said yesterday and what I've said many, many times. I admit my lack of knowledge in philosophy. Very superficial. Why? I was never bothered, never troubled. And as I said yesterday, I saw the Talmidim of Reuven Lvovitz, the mirror. There was something so special about them, particularly Reb Chenich Fishman, Zeicher Tzadik Levracha. So I never found the need. But their people, the Chokrim, and he was a Bucky, they list out here the Sfarim, the Sadjugayim Emunot V'Deyot. I took classes in that, by the way. The Ikarim, Sefer Ikarim, Rabbi Yosef Albo, the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato. I don't have to tell you who we're talking about. And this, too, he played a role. Now, unlike many others who just concentrated on the yeshiva, he was involved in the greater community as well. First of all, he helped build the Beis Yaakov in a suburb right near Lublin. But the Yaakov were very, very important for one simple reason. Who could a yeshiva boy marry? And here you come back to Fiddler on the Roof. Here you come back to the Chafetz Chaim in Likutei Halachot on the Sugya and Saita. The girls were going to gymnasium. The girls were being educated. And what did they look upon? A yeshiva boy, a batlan. What does he know? And by the way, some of this problem overflows until today. I've seen it with my own eyes. I can tell you. My own experience, a batlan, what does he know? Who are they going to marry? Beis Yaakov played a tremendous role because it raised ladies who, first of all, had knowledge, but more important, knew how to value a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shamayim. And he played a big role. This is a Beis Yaakov, Chachmei Lublin, Shidduchim, and all that goes with it. Now, in addition, being a Gerach Chassid, he was a big supporter, member, activist of Agudat Yisrael. And here too, you come to the whole question, do you get involved with politics in a yeshiva? Reb Meir Shapiro tried his best to keep the yeshiva free of politics. That's outside the yeshiva. Nevertheless, Reb Meir Shapiro, everyone knew he was one of the leaders of Aguda. He was in the Sem. It's like yeshivas of Yisrael Chanan, like YU in which I grew up. Everyone knew that the Rav would speak at the Mizrahi convention. It was the affair of the year when the Rav spoke. So they say, willy-nilly, as much as you'll try to keep politics out of the yeshiva, everyone knows where you're coming from. I had this experience in Denver. It's a sad story, but it captures the world. I was Skull and Residence in Denver in 1980. What's Pshat Skull and Residence? The whole government, there were all the anti-Israel propaganda on the campuses. So the Jewish Agency developed a whole program where collegiate people, scholars, would come as a guest of the university and speak. And they would bring over good people from Israel and speak and praise Israel and explain Israel. So I told you I'm a guest of Denver University via this program worked out by the Jewish Agency. And I'm speaking all over the place. And Baruch Hashem, I was a young man 43 years ago, and I knew how to speak. And it made a very big impression. I remember the Reformed Temple invited me, and I told them, look, I can't come to a service or anything, but if it's a club, oh yes, the men's club, the brotherhood is inviting you. And I spoke on Taret Mishpacha. You don't know what an impact that talk made. It made later with Rabbi Goldberg, or Hillel Goldberg, where they built a mikveh in a Reformed synagogue. It may have been a shootout of my talk. But so people went to the Denver Yeshiva. Remember I told you this, the Rosh Yeshiva, I knew them from Lakewood, Rabbi Wasserman, Rabbi Kagan. And they said, look, we have this Rabbi Rakefer here from Israel. The boy should meet a Talmud Chacham like this who lives in Jerusalem. And they say, we know who he is and we appreciate him, blah, 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 but we can't have him speak for our students to see such a Talmud Chacham in Yerei Shemayim who wears a kippah sruga, a knitted kippah. You follow me, Ben? So you see, you can't keep the politics. I understand already what's happening. And Mintzberg was affiliated with Agudat Yisrael. But what's fascinating is his role in Agudat Yisrael. And let me spell it out to you. The Lubavitcher Rebbe in the early 70s introduced Kol Ein V'Bat Matlika Negat Shabbat. All right? I remember in the early 60s, there was a bar mitzvah of a young man that would later be my student in Israel. He's no longer alive, unfortunately. I recall these people, and it's a world gone by, and it hurts me because these are people who are quite a bit younger than I am, and they're not here. He went on to become a rabbi. So we knew his parents, and we were invited to the bar mitzvah at the hotel. Washington Hotel, I think it was called, Far Rockaway, that area. And my wife always had our daughters light the Shabbos candles. These were little girls. So here's my wife lighting with three little girls, and a survivor is watching, and he broke into tears. And, you know, he saw the beauty, the hemshachiyut. Little girls lighting, today their grandmothers of many, many grandchildren in Baruch Hashem still lighting Shabbos candles and seeing their generations light Shabbos candles. So when the Rebbe introduced it, I understood it 1,000%. Beautiful. I mean, he introduced with the bracha, with the why. I mean, could be my daughters make brachas, I don't remember. And he's giving the girls a mitzvah, which is their mitzvah. So the Rebbe was criticized. Yesh Meyayin, who is he? An innovation, Chadash Asamina Torah. So there was a Fabrengen, I think it was 1972. Manny Hoser recorded the Fabrengen from the radio. And you know, these were big things that it's on the radio, you can pick it up. And Manny brought me the tapes to Israel. And I listened to the Rebbe. It was a Faganig, and I think I may still even have the tapes. Faganigan, I'm talking Yiddish, pardon me, Faganigan, enjoyment, beautiful. So I'm listening to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, he quotes Derech HaShulchan, he quotes support, you know, and he says, and they attack me that it's something new. He says, tell me, did we read newspapers 100 years ago? Avu haven the Yidden, the Kriegen denies, where did the Jews get the news? And the Rebbe, as only the Rebbe could, describes the court of the shtibble. He says, Sevishin, Mincha Marav, between Mincha Marav, they sat outside, and they would tell, oh, I hab gesehen, I saw a newspaper from a month, you know, newspapers, it reached a month earlier, it reached, oh, denies is, das is geschlafen, and das hat's getroffen, this happened, that happened. And that's how they got the news. Tell me, they don't read newspapers today? What is this, Chadash Chasum in a Torah? Newspapers they can read? And young girls can't light Shabbos candles? They're very powerful. Now, I can tell you more. Let me, in parentheses, then I'll come back. My dear friend Barry Liebman, have a foolish name, live and be well. We've been friends since high school. So Barry was a big supporter and is a big supporter of Lubavitch, even though he's a YU graduate. I once asked him, I don't want to give you his answer, but he said, I trust the Rebbe, I don't trust other people. And he gave that and said, I understood him. So Barry used to pay for ads Kol Ein V'Bat Madlikan Neirat Shabbat. In English, every mother and daughter like Shabbat. So you would see ads in the New York Times in memory of Mrs. Rose Lieberman. That was Barry's mother and ads. But one time Barry, what was his panasa? He was the biggest publisher of stamps in the world. Chaim, do you know what that means, publisher stamps? America, Israel, they do their own stamps. They have countries in Africa who need someone to do the stamps for them, pick out stamps that they can use as stamps but will sell all over the world to collectors. So Barry was the stamp, biggest stamp publisher in the world. You have no idea what, over the generations what he published. The countries, collectors have them. So one time it was something with a famous movie actress, Marilyn Monroe. It was a yard site, you know, she committed suicide, and Barry published a slew of stamps. He then gives them to dealers who take them further. That New York Times had the ad for Marilyn Monroe stamps opposite the candle lightings, page to page. So I said to Barry, it's a miracle they took a picture where she at least was partially dressed. There's a long cook in the Rebbe with the stamp lighting. All right, close the parentheses, but that's life. You can't control it. But Barry, beautiful, beautiful advertisements telling you when Shabbat begins and when to light, etc. So, you see, papers already were all over Europe. What do you read? What don't you read? And here you come to the whole question, the frum world, and maybe in our world as well, do you have to read all the garbage? I have a neighbor who for years, there's a big Talmud Chacham, he got Haaretz. I said, what are you reading Haaretz? I said, he answered me. He wants to see, you know, what they think. It got so bad he had to cancel his subscription. The same thing with Rabbi Hook. I remember he was getting Haaretz. That reached the point when Sharansky got out, they had a whole article by a guy named Cutler. Could you imagine? Who knows? Not related to Gedolei Yisrael. There's just Abraham Cutler's real name is not Cutler, but there were other Reb Shlomo Cutler, etc. And he had an article. Sharansky would have been better off in prison, being tortured by the KGB, than in the hands of the fanatics from Merkaz HaRav, because his wife, you know, identified, and he's coming out now, and Merkaz HaRav is going to take over. That's when he canceled his subscription. So what do you read? Who do you think are good at putting charge of determining what their members should read from the general press? And that was Rabbi Mintzberg. See, so Rabbi Mintzberg, there was something about him that he was broader. He was not the run-of-the-mill, narrow-minded individual. He didn't dress like a Rav. He wouldn't allow them to call him, speak to him in third person, quote HaRav. He was different, and his knowledge was more broad, chokrim, beyond shas v'paislim chassidut, chokrim, and he played a very vital role in Chachmei Lublin after the Maram Shapiro's death, and after they retired, or I don't know where to use the word pushed out, but pushed out Rav Shlomel Engel. Rav Shlomel Engel was off the beaten path. Too much of a gong, too much of a tzaddik. Like I called it to you last week, a Himmler Yid who simply walked the streets of the world. Now, while all this was happening, you have to remember what was happening with the student body and what the goals were of Maram Lublin and what the heritage was that he was leaving and what was happening in those remaining years until the Hitler period. First of all, and we mentioned this, they were very makpid. The atmosphere had to be a Hasidic atmosphere. And you see, this is very different from today. Today, you take, I don't know of all the yeshiva, but I can tell you in Bells, they're emulating why you began years ago, decades ago. Today, we have Balei Tshuva. Reb Shlomo Wolpe, if you ever need an example of a Baal Tshuva from the Litvisha era, just take the name of the famous Mashgiach, Reb Shlomo Wolpe. These are people who came from homes that were far from Yiddishkeit, and they were very welcomed into the yeshiva. In Chachmei Lublin, in Yachal, if you didn't wear Hasidic dress, they wouldn't take you. You didn't fit in. The concept of Balei Tshuva as we know it today was totally missing. I said a vort even in Lakewood. You go around the United States, and you know, when I in my prime, which ended with Corona, I did a lot of traveling, and I saw wherever you go, you have Lakewood Kolalim that began that from Lakewood Talmidim. And I said to them, look where we're at. When I learned in Lakewood, there was mamish enmity, pardon me for using the word, towards Chabad. I remember when I learned in Lakewood, they would say, Chabad, they waste their time standing on street corners, outreach. Who heard of this? Look where you're at, 70 years later, that you have Lakewood, Kololim, Los Angeles, Chicago, many different places, St. Louis, I'm told. And what do you mean, Kolalim? One Seder in the morning? Sometimes a second Seder in the afternoon? But certainly a third Seder of outreach. And you have to deal with the community, right or wrong. They're teaching the community. They're teaching Alephbet. They're being Makarev. I said, where are you different than Lubavitch? All right, you can make a case that they're Makarev by teaching Torah. Lubavitch also has endless teaching Torah, endless programs. All right, they have more in addition, drinking, making a Kiddush, a Lachayim, a Hitvadut, a Fabrengen, to tell stories of the Rebbeim, what we've spoken about. But you see, this didn't exist. What was interesting, and I quote him, in the student body, they were all from deeply religious backgrounds, but there was one notable exception. And that was a student named Matisyahu Gelman from Vienna, who came from a well-to-do but non-religious home. To the concern and the anguish of his father, his son had become Hasidish and joined YCL, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Now, there are sources here. See, this would make an interesting movie, an interesting volume, who he was, what he did, what became of him. I'm afraid that Hitler ended it all. But let me tell you, books have been written. I got emails. Baumel, I think it's Yoshua Baumel, I wrote a volume on his Rebbe, the Maram Lublin. There's that wrote a Rebbe, I believe the book appeared in Yiddish and then appeared in English translation, A Light and Darkness. I remember the book as a kid. And here in Israel, there's the Mandelbaum family. Their father or grandfather learned in Chachmei Lublin, and they have written books on Reb Meir Lublin. But Reb Meir Shapira, Reb Meir Lublin, the Lublin Rebbe. Now, but I only quote the doctorate because in his doctorate, he has evaluated everything they've written. And when he quotes from these books, I'm fairly certain it's totally accurate. Because whenever you're dealing with biographies like Art Scroll, you don't know where the truth is. And it hurts because you can describe Gedolei Yisrael and be totally truthful. And I can tell you, let me just tell you with Reb Nissen Kamenetsky, I said this years and years ago, and I repeat it, and I think I'm absolutely correct. Lakewood is furious at Reb Nissen, at least part of Lakewood. I don't want to get in trouble with Ben and say all of Lakewood, but you know that element, the Schwartzmans and the Reb Nissen's son, etc. And they were furious. And what were they furious about? The stories he told about Reb Aaron and Reb Aaron's youth. How he almost wound up in Moscow University. What happened to his sister. And how do you read? First of all, I want you to know, when I learned in Lakewood, I told Nissen when the volumes came out, the day the volumes were published, we davened mincha together. It was something, min ha-shamayim. And I told Reb Nissen, there's nothing you're telling me that I don't know. When I learned in Lakewood, everyone knew these stories. It was zeal kribe rafu. It was axiomatic. But even saying, all right, he's revealing stories. But you see, these stories are to the credit of Reb Aaron, because it shows you what he went through to become Reb Aaron. And I would tell a kid, read it, Dafka, read it. You think you have problems, you have challenges. Here he's on the bus, the train, whatever. I think it was a bus, a wagon, to go to Moscow to join his sister. And Reb Reuven Grzebowski pulls him off. And you see, this is fascinating. You talk about someone, Matisyahu Gelman, what became of him? All right. I don't know, it's a question mark. But he was the rare exception who a Baal Tshuva in a yeshiva where everyone is Hasidish. Now, generally speaking, he was also another exception. His family was well off. And most of the kids were from impoverished backgrounds. And of course, this explains to you why there was so much financial pressure on the yeshiva. And here I can let you in on a secret. I still saw part of this. You take the great yeshiva university, Yeshiva Reb Chanan, and do you know that in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, and partially into the 50s, before Pesach, before Rosh Hashanah, any kid who wanted a new suit signed up, and Din Zar would take them down to 7th Avenue, where there were clothing manufacturers, friends of the yeshiva, Chinam, Ein Kesef, gave out 50, 60 suits. Understand? Kids got stipends for food in the cafeteria. And if YU was doing this, you can imagine what had to be done in Chachmei Lublin. So this too was part of the atmosphere, the chesed. Tell me, in Lakewood, do they have to give out food yet?
They have, it's done quietly, but there's a very large organization called Tav Tomchei Torah.
What's it called?
Tomchei Torah.
Tomchei Torah.
Tav for short. Tav, they call it. The abbreviation.
Oh, that's the abbreviation.
Yeah, and they raise a lot of money and they give out.
And they give out.
And especially for Chassanim, they help a lot.
Very nice. Chatanim. I can tell you again, a friend of mine who died this year, let me just mention it, should be a slip for his memory, Irvin Shapiro, who was so gave so much to YU and to the Gush over the years, Shari Tzedek, money used wisely. So on his 50th wedding anniversary with Ruthie, he made 50 weddings in Israel for couples getting married that had become from Russia and the Ukraine. 50 weddings. And Irvin Bunim's daughter, who he knew, a childhood friend from Crown Heights, Chana Rubin. Afterwards, she's, other than Chana Pupko was the last, Chana Orsabel, she, Rubin divorced Pupko, let me get it straight, Pupko died. And she remarried Orsabel, Dr. Orsabel was a dentist. So she was Chana Orsabel, and I know he had as Chana Rubin, dear, her first marriage. It was Irvin Bunim's daughter. She's a tzaddeket. She should live in Bell. She's well into her 90s today. Not that, again, everyone older, you're not that well. And the weddings were all arranged by her. She was involved in outreach to the Russian and Ukrainians. So you see, this too was part of the atmosphere, the overwhelming chesed. In the Litvisha world, they weren't as poor as the Chesedish world. And in the Litvisha world, who can anyone tell me they had a bracha? The dummies from Germany and America were coming in. How did they compare with the Litvisha? A Litvisha kid was 9 years old, he made a seam in Megillah. When he was 13 years old, he made a seam in Baba Batra. An American kid came in, all right, he learned 100 blot Gemara altogether with Rashi, at Nishpashtan and the Taisvis. He didn't know how to understand the Rambam. And he comes into Mir, comes into Talmud. They hired Bachram to teach them. Are you aware of this, or am I being Megala secrets to you? Hired Bachram to teach them. And this provided panasa. It was a two-way street that worked perfectly on either side. An American kid, imagine you're learning b'chavruta with a young Shmuel Volk. American kid, he's in the Mir, he's learning Shlomo Volpi in America, a Scandinavian kid, wherever he came from. He's learning with a Litvish Talmud Chacham. And the Talmud Chacham has panasa. And here it was the yeshiva. Okay, but more to the atmosphere. And here you come to another challenge. What did Rav Meir Shapiro want? And afterwards, the Shlomo Engel and Rav David Mintzberg. You see, this was to be a Hasidic yeshiva. And you have to be a chassid to appreciate this. Excuse me, he says this in his doctorate, and I understand it very well. Chassidim Each one is different. The angel world, the demonstrators, all that's going on here, the Meraglim, as they were called in every Alon, the Seraf Shabbos. Did you see any of the Alonim with the demonstrators, the progressives? The Meraglim, they fit boy Korach, and the Meraglim versus Kalev ben Yefuneh, Yehoshua ben Nun. The Dashonim here never had it easier to write up the Alonim for this past Shabbat. So when they look at the Hasidic world, they see everyone is black, everyone looks the same. I'll never forget, maybe I'm going back to 69, 1970, I discovered stores in Jerusalem that were very different. I can still remember where the store was. I don't know if it's still there. It's 53, could be it is. A yarmulke store. A yarmulke. All different. And I see a guy, a yarmulke, is buying a black yarmulke. And he's looking in the mirror. I can't, what's he looking? Looking at, oh, a Gary yarmulke has to pop up a little. How did they do that? What did they put oxygen under the yarmulke? Hydrogen that has to, and I looked at him. It has to pop up. If it wouldn't pop up, he wouldn't buy it. I'm looking at him with literature eyes. Idiot. Any yarmulke is a yarmulke. What's going on here? It's the story with the, again, you'll never, with Mashgiach from Chaim Berlin, the rabbi of the Yisrael of Radmi, give me his name. No, all the recordings, Avigdor Miller. Rav Avigdor Miller meets a kid, there's a Tuesday, and New York was shaking. He meets a kid on East Broadway buying an etrog, and the kid is looking at the etrog, and the mashgiach comes over to him and says, do you look inside your soul that you're looking at that etrog? And the city was shaking. And I'll take the etrog and go back to learning. What are you wasting your time? And this guy is not an etrog. An etrog is a hiddur. Ephesus, Ephshadur. Maybe there's something to it. Yarmulke has to pop up.
Simcha Bun Cohen is married to Avigdor Miller's granddaughter. And he goes in his shita. He speaks like him. Says over from all the time.
Very, no. Rabbi Avigdor Miller, very powerful. He made many Balei Tshuva. But I'm happy to tell you, I've met many Balei Tshuva here. They took everything from him except this anti-Zionism. He goes, I once heard a tape, he goes after Golda Meir, we find Shalom. You know, we daven la mashinim al tikva. Their viewpoints today, and you can't have kavana like that because of tinokot shenish bu'u. We have to understand what happened here, but it's not for now. But you see, now, every Hasidus, they're not the same. Ger is ger, bells is bells, chatkav is chatkav. Each one has different minhagim, different migunim, different dress. If kids are going to come in to Chachmei Lublin and leave with changes, the parents will be hysterical. And this involves, it involves Shidduchim. What are you talking about? This Agerez or Chasmachotten, the Dane of us is Nishta Agerez or Chatmish, covered for the Rebbe, that you don't understand the Gerez, Rebbe. You see, bells. These are malchut, it's like citizenship. And this, I'll use the word that Slavin uses about the Maram Shapiro's goal, to create pan-Hasidicism. You follow? You retain your own minhagim, but it's an institution where Hasidus is respected. We don't expect you to change. We don't expect you to change Nusach. We don't want you to change the Nigunim. We don't want you to change to the different Rebbeim. But Chassidus is respected. And I need not tell you, this was very unique. In YU, as I told you, we had one kid, Chaim Nashman. I think today his name is Nyman. We knew him as Nashman. I told you, this kid, his father was a sheikhet. I could just see his father mit a bod chassidishi yid in front of my eyes. His mother, transplanted from Poland. He was a foreign element in YU. He's the kid that Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik used to eat up alive when he saw him kiss a mezuzah or his tzitzit out. In Chachmei Lublin, you had an atmosphere. This is chassidus. This is what we want. You had to be a chassid and a genius to be there. And they had Talmidim, Kutz, Kuznets, Sichelin, Boyan, Alexander, Tzanz, Rushin, Belz, Breslov, Bavov. And believe it or not, there was a handful of Lithuanian students who were seeking, wanted the Warmkeit, wanted the warmth, but no one was asked to change their minhagim from the house. And in this respect, when you read the memoir literature, Reb Meir Shapiro, Reb Shimola Engel, Reb David Minsberg, total success. And some of the kids went on to become Hasidic Rebbeim, inherited the mantle. Exactly Reb Meir Shapiro. One of them was very famous, the Strickover Rav, Reb Avram Landau, later in Israel, big Talmud Chacham. He began in Chachmei Lublin. Now, while all this was going on, who's running the yeshiva? These were spiritual personalities. Reb Shlomele, Reb Shimola Engel, was a malach. Reb David Minsberg, and totally involved in the spiritual part. And here you have a Talmud who becomes very important. Unfortunately, Hitler is Hitler. Aaron Levo. Reb Aaron Levo. And he is very close to Reb Meir Shapiro. How is he very close? First of all, he was a Talmud in Lublin. He was a wonderful soul. And he was so close to Reb Meir Shapiro that when Reb Meir Shapiro's brother sought a shidduch for his only daughter, he became a nephew by marriage to Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, he helped in the fundraising, he helped in the administration, he helped in the public relations, and this quote is attributed to him, and a beautiful quote. Chanukah of Chachmei Lublin, 1933. And he describes 1,600 candles burning outside the yeshiva. 200 Talmidim times 8 candles, last day of Chanukah. 1,600. The yeshiva used up so much candles, olive oil, that in Lublin, the stores that were selling the oil for the candles, the shops were sold out. Almost immediately, the yeshiva bought up so much oil. And you see, this also became very important in fundraising. When you describe 40 meters of candles lit up for Hanukkah, 200 students singing various nigunim according to their own Hasidic court, this hit home. Pan Hasidus, it helped in fundraising. You could feel, wow, it's sort of a kibbutz Goliath, that everyone could get together and everyone could be together with all the different minhagim. No one was forced to correspond to anyone else. And this became quite important and quite helpful in the fundraising, and David Liebwahl became a key figure in the post-Maram Shapiro era. Now, let me go further and just to capture the atmosphere. Did it work with everyone? So see, here too, everyone has total freedom of choice. Where do you want to study? Where do you want to go? I have a dear student. It's my student in the 60s. He came from a very difficult background. Mother and father both went through the hell of the Holocaust. His mother in particular, you knew them from Washington Heights, Charlie. His mother in particular, she and her sister were the only survivors out of 11 children. Why did they survive? Because they were in jail at the time the Gestapo rounded up the Jews. That's how they survived, in Paris. And everyone gone, and to live with that feeling, why me, how did I survive? They had one son, a genius, my dear student. Well, many years go by, lo aleinu, and we don't have nachat in life, we suffer. God has his plans. His wife died young, left him with two children, wonderful children. So no greater goal in life than to see his son and why you graduate like he was. And kid starts YU. P.S. he's in Nei Yisrael today, but not in the Nei Yisrael that's going to college. The Nei Yisrael that's learning around Rabbi Aaron Feldman. And wow, you see, freedom of choice. You don't like this yeshiva, you go to another. Have various types. Kids coming to Chachmei Lublin, either you had to fit into the program, or it wasn't for you. And here on page 387, Dr. Slavin, Rabbi Slavin, interviews a student living in Brooklyn. Let me see the name here, one second. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Tevel. And the interview had to be done, let's say, 30 years ago. He's alive and kicking, currently residing in Brooklyn, a rabbi of a shul, could be Borough Park, and he interviews him about Chachmei Lublin. He's the only one, he has a footnote here, he's the only person, alumni of Chachmei Lublin, who was not happy in the yeshiva. And the kid explains himself. He couldn't take the formality of the yeshiva. He was a little kid growing up in a shtibble, happy to learn what you want, learn when you want, learn how you want. And he became a Talmud Chacham, and he qualified for Chachmei Lublin. But Chachmei Lublin, a test to get in. Who ever heard of a test to get into a shtibble? It's listening and learning. You want to sit and learn. No one will bother you. Chachmei Lublin, classes you had to attend. People knew, the mashgiach knew, whether you're learning, whether you're keeping to the rules of the yeshiva. People would tell you whether you could come back to the yeshiva. We didn't mention that, but at the end of each term, if chas v'chalila, you broke the rules and were wasting time, they told you not to come back. And he found this burdensome. He still talks, I'm quoting from the doctorate, some six decades later, about the whole structure of testing, accepting students, and the general framework of Chachmei Lublin as being burdensome. He never studied Daf Yomi. It was part of the rejection. Only in Brooklyn, as a rabbi in New York, later, when they demanded Daf Yomi, he began teaching Daf Yomi. But you see, you'll ask yourself, why did he remain? The truth is, in Poland, you had very little choice. It's not like Lithuania. You don't like Slabatki, you can go to Telz. You don't like Telz, you go to Mead. You don't like Mead, you go to Rotten. There's so much choice. You go learn with the Pshimin Shkov in Grodno. Here in Lublin, if your parents wanted you to go to the yeshiva, this was the yeshiva. And this was the atmosphere with Reb Meir Shapiro. There was more to it because he was so unique. And there, once again, you come back to his chazanas, to his thinking, to the songs he wrote. And here he quotes from memoir literature of another Talmud, Azriel David, and he describes Reb Meir Shapiro, what we spoke about in Tfilat Geshem. And when Reb Meir Shapiro would come to the piyut in Tfilat Geshem, that not one person in this room has ever said, maybe I said it when I was a kid, told atam nishpachtamam alecha kamayim, that the descendants of the avot, their blood was spilt like water because of their belief in God. Reb Meir Shapiro would break into tears, and you can't imagine how emotional it was. Who was Reb Meir Shapiro would take with him from Chachmei Lublin to act as his choir, his vocalist, to back him up? A Talmud, Yankala Haas, Jacob Haas. Did I mean anything? No, you don't recall. Jacob Haas, remember, was a chazan. His daughters, he only had daughters, and his daughters sang with him. There were record after record that was issued. Do you don't remember Yankala? What, where am I making a mistake? Yankala Haas. No, what name do you... You remember the name?
It'll come back.
It'll come, all right. I remember Yankala, I remember this name. And you see, this ability could never be replaced. This ability, he was one of a kind. And Reb Meir Shapiro, time and again, difficult moments, broke into song, carried the chassidim, carried the students. The atmosphere was so unique, so different. The yeshiva succeeded. The tragedy is Hitler, it all came to an end so quickly, so easily, so early, it breaks the heart. Why you? How old is why you? Why you? Traces its origins, 1886. All right. I don't say it's the same YU, but YU, look how many years. Lakewood, 1943. Kanain Hara, you're now 2023. 80 years. I don't say it's the same Lakewood. Life moves on. We never stand still. But take a look at the success, and you don't have to go any further than last week. bells and gear, the weddings, the crowd? Abe, where were we in 1945? Just think. Gear, bells, Rebbeim, broken in spirit, Chassidim, murdered, the whole universe gone. And take a look. Take a look where we are today. If these are intangible miracles, I don't know what is. And here with Chachmei Lublin, so beautiful, so alive, so constructive, so unique. And take a look what Hitler did, one after another. All right, I'll leave off at this point. I still have to talk about Rav Rimmer, and I will also cite some more memoir literature of people I knew who went to Chachmei Lublin and how it affected their lives. And I have to say, it even affected my life ever so slightly. But we'll leave that for next time we meet. When we finish Chachmei Lublin, we'll pick up with the Lashon. So what do we do today? We continued with the atmosphere, the post Reb Meir Shapiro, what could be replaced, what couldn't be replaced. But there's no question he was a very unique individual. And it's like why you today. Why you continue some dignity, and why you have a wonderful atmosphere, choice, the Rav is not there. And there's no question when the Rav was there, it centered around the Rav. Today, with all due respects to Gedolei Yisrael who teach in YU, it's not centered around anyone. There are a number of different voices. You take Lakewood. Lakewood in my time was just Rav Aaron Cutler. That was Lakewood. Today, Lakewood, number of Rashi Yeshiva, take turns once a month, each one gives a shiur, etc. It's a different institution. It's a city unto itself, not just a small yeshiva that occupies, in my time, two converted families. Buildings, little structures in Lakewood. One was the dining room that had part of the dormitory. The other one was the Beis Medrash, which had more facilities than the dining area. But that was it. Today, it's a different world. And just Hitler breaks the heart, and yet the rupture and the reconstruction. Ad kan. Now, are there any questions on what I've said? Yes, Ben.
Just want to make a very quick comment. The Lakewood Kollelim, 90%+, are Kiruv Krovim. They move to a city, they're learning full-time, and they're learning from people. There are occasionally people that come in and become Balei Tshuva, but it's not a focus. Often they'll have one or two Avreichim who will do a little bit of Kiruv. There's a small percentage of community Kollelim, which is what you do.
What I saw with community Kollelim.
Yeah, for
instance, I saw in Los Angeles, Mamish reaching out to the whole Kehila. Chicago, they tell me too, that there's a lot of outreach. But I don't say it's outreach like Chabad, don't misunderstand me. It's outreach for those who are interested. It's a little bit different. Chabad seeks to pick you up. Lakewood will pull you in if you're interested. But nevertheless, there is outreach.
100%. Yes.
I'm just saying but when I learned in Lakewood, well, all right, I just want to say something. I touched upon something yesterday, and at night I was dreaming, and I said, you know, I should tell them the whole story, how this impacted upon me. So let me come back to yesterday's Shia. I used the word, we were halachically haticha ruil hitkabed ba. I said in modern Hebrew, they used that word, a nice-looking girl. And when I first heard that, I was turned off. I felt it was vulgar. You know, compare a girl to me, Chaticha Rulit Kabeva. So I'm going back now 50 years. So I remember we were discussing this with a shidduch. So a chaver of mine, no longer alive, Eli Marcus, says, no, you don't understand. Hebrew today, they use the word chatich, chaticha. What does it mean? If you're making sure, oh, he's a good-looking guy. You follow me? Chatich. He's worth catching. That's the word. Chaticha. Oh, that's a not, like you would say, oh, no, she's a nice-looking girl. It's worth it. All right. And he said to me, you should be happy that they use a halachic concept in modern language. So I don't know if it's right or wrong, but this is the modern Hebrew, chatich, chaticha. My grandson, I had one grandson who went out with many girls till he found the right girl, Baruch Hashem. So he said to me, I want a girl that when I walk into the room, people will look up to us. You follow? So he's saying, nice, look, fine, good, beautiful. Okay. This rubbed off on me, and I had golden moments in the army. I developed a theme in the army. You know, you got to keep them alert and awake. And boy, this used to hit home. I used to, talking and hundreds of people listening. Some of them, someplace I spoke with just officers. People had the rank. I spoke up to the rank of Brigadier General. I don't think I ever spoke to a full general, but Brigadier Generals, yes. So, I said, what a wonderful language Hebrew is. We have no curse words in Hebrew. Ein lanu klalat b'ivrit. And everyone looks at me when, you know, this is written up too. When you go into the army, a kid who's from, suddenly you're doing basic training, you hear curses all over the place. I said, tein b'kalalim aval rak ba'anglit ba'aravit oberusit. And I can curse in all three of those languages. In the army, you hear it all over the place. Aval b'ivrit, aval lefamim holchim b'ri. You go in, let me say it in English, but I'm living it in Hebrew. You go into the street, you're walking in the street, and you hear kids playing. And the kids are fighting with each other. Tzorkim echad al reu, ben zona, ben nida. I said, Eilu lo kohod, ze divrei Torah. Ma ze ben nida. Pagum, maze pagum. Tzichim lahavir shayurim shleimim al habituyim ha'elu. Tira kama niflaim tzirei Yisrael al admat kodesh. Afilu kishem mekalalim zerakin munachim chilchatiyim. Abe, you with me? Ben nida, ben zona. No. Batson, muteret lekohen, lo muteret. You got to be a big Talmud Chacham. So I have to tell you that naughtiness in my talking is a result of Haruilit Kabeba. Later, you know, the famous story which I wrote up in Washington. I believe I wrote it up again, but I have to tell you, I still meet people who were there when I would pull a shtick like this. And they're still laughing. And that's what I told you, that how you can curse and learn Torah at the same time. And here I am, we're in basic training, and everyone is cursing the mafakeh, what we have to do next. And I'm mumbling, quoting the Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, Perek Yudbet, Halachim Bet, Tipach Rucham So. Megale Kitzim, if you try to figure out when the capes will be, drop dead, Tipach Rucham, and the Mafakeh says, Rakefet, Matam Memalel, Chayal, Matam, what are you muttering? I say, Lomei Torah Mafakeh. He says, Tamshich, continue, learning Torah, he loves it. Tipach Rucham, Shomachasvei Kitzim. All right, so I just want to add that to yesterday's shir, because I'm still, I tell you, I'm still troubled by Chatecha Rilit Kabeipa. I could never talk, I don't know, it bothers me. But Eli Marcus said, it's halacha, be proud, that's the word. When you make a shidduch, I've made many shidduch in Baruch Hashem, and make a shidduch, is she good looking, Rabbi? Oh, beautiful, you know, yeah. Listen, good looking is one man's passion, is another one's hot water bag. So beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. the whole sugyer in Tainet, the Masechet Tainet, women, good-looking, not-looking, the Gola, what it does to Jewish girls, etc., lo pashut. All right, I want to end off the shiur here before I open it, and I modell HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I cannot tell you, I don't know of anyone else from the golden period of the Rav who's still teaching and still being Machadesh. I don't know. So I hope maybe it's my heart is pure and the Ribbono Shel Olam knows that. And I have only one desire in life, Lahagdil Torah, Lahadira. The Ribbono Shel Olam has privileged me. And I have to say that with all that I've published, what I just published now is the most important. And it'll be republished. I'll let you know through anyone who's on Morty Paragon's mailing list will get notice when it's coming out again and where. And that's only a first spice. I have something very major coming out in the next issue, beyond the next issue of Chakira. I haven't signed off yet. We're working on corrections, but it's major. It represents a lifetime of learning, of living Torah and creating Torah. And as I said, how I grew up in the Bronx, 600,000-700,000 plus Jews, a handful of Shomer Shabbos family. If there were 10, I'm overstating the case. Yeah, there were old men Shomer Shabbos, but people in their 40s, 50s, unheard of. Ma'aden li li lefanecha Eloheinu v'Elohei avoteinu, shesamta chelki miyoshvei Beit HaMedrash v'lo samta chelki miyoshvei Kranot, שאני משכים וכן משכימים, אני משכים לדברי תורה וכן משכינים לדברים בתלם, אני אומר וכן ממלים, אני אומר ומקבל שכה, וכן ממלים ואין מקבלים שכה, אני רץ וכן רצים, אני רץ לחי העולם הבא וכן רצים לבי השחת, שנהמה, ואתה אלוהים תורידם לבי השחת, אנשי דומים ומימה, לא יחצו ימיהם, ואני אפתח בך. I want to thank you very much for joining with me today and until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. Morty, could you turn in the world and we'll allow Yomo to continue his... He woke up, Yomo, let Yomo get him. Tadir v'she'en tadir. Tadir kodim.
Recording stopped.
We went to talk to him, and he said he has all these girls coming in. His job is not to change them. He wants to make them what they are, better of what they
right.
are.
Right. No, that's the thing. I always have that opinion when you have Balei Tshuva, and they say to you, I want to go here, go there. I say, go back to where you came from. You know their ability. You know their mentality. Okay, are there any questions? First of all, I want to thank everyone from around the world. Do I see Mark Licht? I didn't see him yesterday.
Good summer to you, Rebbe.
He's here. Yeah,
good healthy summer.
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm serious. Wait,
okay. And Nachum, you told your parents I got the letter.
Oh, the letter, right. Yeah, I have to tell them. I saw them last night. I have to tell them.
Don't forget, because let them know a miracle happened and a letter reached me within 2 weeks and not...
I'm trying to get to the post office to deposit some checks for the shul. They shut them all down. It's a disaster.
It's a disaster.
This friend of mine had to get a credit card in the mail, and they said, we sent it to you. He said, did you send it with the post office? Who sends anything with the post office?
You have no idea. I have to send to get my driver's license that my doctor signed and my eye doctor, and they give me a little envelope. Big form, I had to refold it 6 times to get it in, and then I had to make a special trip where I hope that I put into a mailbox, I hope it still works, that's all I can say. And then they're idiots, let me fax it, let me email it. No, you have to mail it back. All right, if
how is Ari?
How's what?
Ari.
Who are you referring to, Ari?
The Ari who wrote the note for your eye doctor.
Oh, Ari is Dr. Teitelbaum. Give covet. He's great. He's great. Baruch Hashem. And I'm going to have new glasses shortly. Both my driving glasses and my reading glasses are going to be changed. So I might be able to see you better in a few weeks' time.
Okay. We mentioned that the Rav, it was a big, as if it was a big chiddush that he embraced Mizrahi. But his father, Rav Moshe, had already done that, even though the Rav did go back.
You're jumping too many steps. His father, Rav Moshe, taught in Tachkamoni, but he had bitter battles with Professor Babylon. I have the name written out in Shulamit Meisman writes about the battles. Okay, the name will come to me. He had bitter battles with the dean, who was academic and enlightened and a little bit like Zeitlin in his theories. So Rav Moshe didn't exactly become a card-carrying Mizrahiite, but his son, Mori Rebbe, Meir Balaban, help me out, you don't remember the
Balaban.
Name? Balaban, thank you, Yitzchak. Rav Meir Balaban, Professor Balaban, he was the head, Rav Moshe Nishkelet Honik, you know a little mama lesson? Do you know what I just said? He didn't lick honey. It's a Yiddish expression. And the Rav became a Mizrahiite. Wow, Kol Dol Dido fake. They just published, I'm trying to get it, a new book with all the Rav's drushed on Mizrahi translated into English. And a dummy named Rakefet took one drusha, and the drusha of Yosef Yechav, and he built a world upon it. So that's the Rav. But you're right, Rav Moshe was more open. That's why I didn't mention Rav Moshe. But the Rav on his own was a big agudist. Rav Lazer Silver, who was Maspid Rav Chaim Moiser. Do you know what the head of Aguda in America said to me? Your Rebbe gave the most aguda drusha ever given in America. And I said, of course I know what you're talking about. It's Hespet for Rav Chaim Moiser. Read that Hespet for Rav Chaim Moiser. You'll shiver, you'll shake. But that was the Rav 1940. The Rav of 1945 is totally different. And there are reasons why. And read a guy named Rakefet's essay on Theodor Herzl. That says it all.
I think that everybody who's attending your shiur is grateful for all the effort that you've put in to prepare, to come, and to do the research, because we see that there isn't a class that you haven't prepared for. It is amazing, always on time, and I think that we all mark your tone.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Rubin. If I can say yitz, we know each other so many decades. I appreciate your warm words. And I'll tell you what my problem is. I have hundreds of thousands of sheets of innovative thinking and classes and sources. What will be with them? Who can inherit it? That's where the problem begins. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, when a great Amorim held up their hands and there's so much here and it's being lost. And that problem I haven't solved, but I can only say, Kach Yidaka Shel Chayim. By the way, you have a big schut, you wrote to the Rav. Rebbe, it's time to start publishing. And the Rav double-talked you very nicely, but take a look today what we have in the name of the Rav. I would say it must be over 100 different volumes that all bear his name. Is Rabbi Bednash coming in, or aren't we have to clear out? Are there any more questions? It's Kasha Alai HaPreda, but the Ribbono Shel Olam should give strength, and we should pick up again. It'll probably be the second week of Elul, but I'll let you know exactly through Professor Tarrigan. And until we meet again in health, happiness, better health. I'm looking at some of my Talmidim, and I know they need the bracha for better health. Until then, the only words that Yomo understands, Das Vigdadya.
One word.
When will the recordings of the Rav be available?
If I had my way, tomorrow. But I'm you know, like everything else in life, I've done great things, but it moves on beyond you. How many people know that I'm the guy who got the campus for YU here in Israel? That a little poor kid from the Bronx gave YU a gift that's worth today over $100 million. To buy a little apartment in Israel, you're talking a million and a half. Imagine a campus like this and why you can still build two complete, build multi-story buildings without a variance. But that's life. Life moves on. What I did, that people call me editor of the work on the Rav, that's the biggest slap in my face. Yesh Me'ayin I created. But today, tapes are available. But all right, the real collection of tapes, I would have never mentioned it, but at Irwin Shapiro's funeral, that's all they spoke about. It all began in a classroom on Abarbanel 24 in Rehavia, BMT, over 50 years ago. And I have a schut, Baruch Hashem, and maybe the Rebbeinu Shlomo is kind to me because he knows my heart. It's just pure, just Torah. All I want to see, Shmirat Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, a strong, wonderful Israel, an army twice as big, twice as strong. But we'll get there. We've come a long way since 48, but we still have a way to go. Yomo, you can...
Rabbi, just one thing. Yeah. Somebody asked me, is why are you building more... by Chris, like, are they bringing over undergraduates now or something?
I'll tell you as follows. YU is, you can't believe what's going on in the building. You know where Sherry used to sit?
Yes.
You come in there, you can't even enter. It's construction. What they're doing, they totally divided up. It's the third time they're building in that area. And when I go down now to say, see how Sherry's doing, I have to walk a whole different way. And why are they doing this? All right, this is what has been explained to me. And I know this to be true. Why you hired two Israeli ladies who are in higher education for decades and have all the influence necessary with the Malag. Do you know what the Malag is? Mo'etzet Lahaskala Gevoha. Now this means, from this point on, I'm only telling you what I'm hearing. When I finish teaching and all the doctor and dentist appointments that Malk and I have, I'll make an appointment to speak with the boss, my Talmidah, Stephanie, and find out what's the truth. YU is combining, it may be with Tel Aviv U, in offering the ability to do all college here in Shai Sims School. Some of the classes will be real time, I imagine in Tel Aviv U. Some will be Zoom in Grus, and you can get your bachelor's. That's what I believe is in the Ari Berman. This is a major step forward. And if you saw my review of Ari's book, Online Tradition, I end off with the review that I'm waiting for the next step. Then I quote the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Chav Tet, that Atidin Bate Knesiyata Bate Medeshat Shabbava La'alot Atza, and to see the real YU here. Interestingly enough, in the weekend's Jerusalem Post, there was a review of Rabbi Berman's book, and they put it down a little. But their reviewing the review as a book written for the scholarly world. My review views it as a book written for the boys and girls graduating at yeshiva high schools. You're thinking where to go. what is the uniqueness of YU, and that's Ari Berman's book. And by the way, part of it reflects today's shiur, that YU, you have choice. You don't have to fit into a certain mold. And this is beautiful for you and for the continuity of Torah Tashem Tamima. Look at the review, you'll see what I wrote. All right, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
We just went over 2 hours again, and it's going to be a skip a day.
Okay, you're almost morning. Telling me we went over 2 hours again, and it'll skip a minute on the recording.
A little bit.
But it won't interfere with the heart of the world.